Welcome back to Middle East Forum Radio here on WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia Talk. I'm Greg Roman, your host, and our next subject comes at the headlines of the New York Times describing the situation on the ground in Beirut, Lebanon, an article by Vivian Gee. Protesters on Tuesday stopped Parliament from convening to discuss a package of controversial laws that critics fear could provide amnesty for past corruption as crowds blocked roads, leading to government buildings and skirmishes broke out with the riot police. The action comes on the 34th day of widespread anti-government protests that have both galvanized and paralyzed the country, Lebanon. And the protesters' success seemed likely to sharpen tensions between the government and the people. To discuss these protests and its wider implications for American national security interests in the Middle East, I would like to welcome Tony Bergeron, a research fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, where he focuses on Lebanon, Hezbollah, Syria, and the geopolitics of the Levant. Born and raised in Lebanon, Tony has testified to the U.S. House of Representatives on several occasions regarding U.S. policy towards those countries, and his research currently focuses on the relationship between Iran's Hezbollah model and regional states. His writings have appeared in many publications, including the Wall Street Journal, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, and Foreign Policy. Tony, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Thank you.
34 days of protests in Lebanon. What are they protesting about?
Well, the trigger for it all is essentially the major economic mismanagement and impending collapse, basically, of the Lebanese economic and financial system. What brought this about is the endemic corruption of the Lebanese political class, which is sectarian based. And basically, with minor exceptions, this political class, in one form or another, and the families and the figures that constitute it, have been ruling Lebanon since pretty much, you know, since the days of the Civil War and its aftermath. So this is a long-standing elite, you know, that took different shapes when the Syrians occupied the country from from when they entered in 1976 to and then when they took it in 1990 until 2005 when they left. A lot of the figures were still part of that political class, and then there were newcomers and so on. But basically, it's the same cases, and they are tremendously corrupt. And finally, you had a movement that is unique in modern history in that it is not taking shape along sectarian lines. It is not being driven by the sectarian parties. It is driven against the sectarian parties and against them all, across the board and across the various regions of Lebanon. So that's new. It's very interesting to watch, and it has galvanized the population in Lebanon to not yield and not relent in the face of the provocations and the various machinations of this elite.
So we have our old leaders of the sectarian classes in their political representation, Saad Hariri, the Future Movement. We have Michel Aoun. We have Hassan Nasrallah, Nabi Berri, Walid Jumblatt, mm-hmm. all identified with Shia, Sunni, Maronite, Druze, and different Lebanese mm-hmm. minorities. Who is the grassroots leadership of this current protest movement, if any?
There aren't really any visible leaders, certainly not among sort of established, even among the movements like what we call non-governmental organizations or civil society organizations. Not even those really. I mean, some of them, yes, are there and they're participating, but it is a lot more organic. There are organizers that are talking through social media and stuff like that. But because it is so widely diffused. So you have, you know, a whole thing happening in the north, in Tripoli, for instance, which, you know, a lot of the people who are part of those civil society movements or NGOs usually are from like the Beirut area or maybe from sort of Shia areas in the south or, you know, that are anti-Hezbollah or something of that nature. No. A much more diffuse phenomenon here, and they recently just scored on the level of organization a first minor victory in a bar association election when they fielded a candidate against the combined candidate of all of the other parties, right? And they won, so they felt that now they can mobilize even in a voting situation against the political elite. It's still obviously all of this, there's still a lot of questions, you know, how you translate this popular movement into anything political. Can you coexist with the sectarian system and not be co-opted, or do you you know, the protests are demanding that the whole system gets replaced. How do you achieve that? All of these are big questions, and of course the big elephant in the room is Hezbollah, which is, you know, an armed army. It's a militia that is not about to simply give up its position in Lebanon. And it, in fact, what's interesting and ironic is that Hezbollah now has come out as the strongest defender of the sectarian-based system and the status quo, which is interesting when you consider its history as a sort of a revolutionary movement that wanted to integrate Lebanon into a larger Islamic state ruled by Iran. So now that this system works so much to their advantage, that they are now really its strongest defenders.
Now, Hassan Nasrallah, speaking about Hezbollah, makes a speech a few days ago where he says, those who investigate corruption, look at Hezbollah first. And this is a message which is meant to temper or mollify or ameliorate some of the Shia concerns of us seeing protesters in the Dahiya neighborhood of southern Beirut starting to rise up against their patrons, against Hezbollah. I mean, would you say this is unique insofar as you have former or current Hezbollah supporters going out onto the streets, bucking the Nasrallah, let's call it like fanboydom, whatever you want to call it, and his status is almost a living martyr, a living saint, and saying to him, you know what, Nasrallah, we're going to come out, we're going to protest against you because we're not happy with the sectarian system.
Right, so to introduce a little bit of color, so there was obviously a mass movement of protests among the Shia in Beirut, in the south, in the Bekaa, in Baalbek, and so on, and they attacked by name, you know, Nabih Birri. They attacked by name various MPs of Hezbollah, and they. Then the Amal and Hezbollah parties unleashed goons against them to beat them up and rough them up, which they did with the complicity of the Lebanese security forces as well. And so there was a little bit of a sort of a tempering of that message. So some people will isolate Nasrallah, you know, and neutralize him as a target. So they will say, well, you know, Hezbollah MPs and ministers are corrupt. Hassan Nasrallah can be set aside. It's not widespread. I mean, you see different types of opinions. So, but it is something new. Like they, and the way the people in Lebanon are describing it, the Shia who are coming out on against Hezbollah in these areas are describing it as sort of the barrier of fear has been kind of broken, right? So it is new. It is certainly disconcerting for them to see this unrelenting phenomenon, and not just that it's coming out against them in their areas, but that it's meshing with the rest of the country in places where, you know, with Sunnis, with Christians, and so on, and that there's no sort of light for any ability for sort of sectarian agitation. That, and believe me, they've tried, right? Far, all of them have failed. Now, you know, how we go from here and how it progresses from here, all of that remains to be seen. We really don't know. It's really anyone's guess.
Now let's do a little bit of a comparative analysis, if we can, on the protests also going on in Iraq and in Iran. Is there a connection with Lebanon?
Well, I mean, there is on the surface a connection that in all these three places, the Iran, obviously Iran inside Iran, the regime in Iran is the regime in Iran, and but also it's the regime in Iran has its tentacles and its assets that are the major powers in Iraq. So the various Shia political parties in Iraq and the various, more specifically, the militias that are modeled on the IRGC and are led, commanded by, and financed by the IRGC in Iraq. These guys are the powers that be in Iraq. And they so the protests in Iraq specifically have taken on very much an anti-Iran color. So you will see very specific targeting of Iran and Iranian figures and Ali Khamenei, the leader of Iran, and the various militias that are associated with Iran. In Lebanon, because Hezbollah, while obviously being explicitly targeted, and Iran's presence in Lebanon is Hezbollah, it is, and more recently, after the Iranian protests started, the Lebanese started talking about, a unity of protests from Beirut to Tehran. So they're consciously kind of tying themselves to this phenomenon. But in terms of its actual expression in Lebanon, it's an expression against the system of which Hezbollah is the head, right? So it is not directly or explicitly, expressed in terms of Iran the way it is in Iraq, but it is very much understood that when you're attacking the system, you're attacking the Hezbollah-led system as well, and you're attacking Hezbollah as the chief, sort of organizer of this system.
So the last time that I look at popular revolt or protest, at least on this level, maybe a little bit larger than this, is February 14th, 2005. We have the beginning of massive protests against the Syrian presence in Lebanon, the subsequent assassinations of Rafiq Hariri, the demand for the individuals behind that assassination attempt. And I think it was some 17 people were killed in that massive bomb that went off in Beirut, maybe even more. On his convoy. And it culminates on the 27th of April, 2005, with free and fair elections, or as free and fair as those elections can be, in Lebanon, and the removal of Syrian troops. So if we look at that time period, if we go between the middle of February and the end of April 2005, it's about 10 weeks. Now we're in our 6th week of protests. Is there anything that could be done on a similar level that the Lebanese authorities would being able to enact? I think the disarming of Hezbollah is a pipe dream, but maybe there would be some ability to separate the Lebanese army and Hezbollah. You came on here on this program a few months ago, and you said very, very, with a very colorful description, that Hezbollah is a terror organization and the Lebanese army is part of Hezbollah. It's interchangeable. What comes out of these protests?
Well, the first point is very important to differentiate between these protests and the 2005 protests. In fact, you can argue that these protests are the mirror opposite of the 2005 protests. There's really no connection because the 2005 protests, although there was a sense of spontaneity at first, just the outrage at the killing and the sort of the brazenness of it. Immediately, the organization of them was taken over by the sectarian political parties. Immediately, right? In this case, it's the exact opposite. The sectarian parties are not involved. They are the target of these protests. So this is a fundamental difference that has to be kept in mind. Now, how do you go and, what do the authorities do? The authorities are trying to placate by trying to say, well, let's form a new government. Let's do this. Let's do that. And none of this is really working, right? Because they don't, there's no trust between the protests and the political class, right? So any proposal that's coming from the political class is being dismissed, because they're, it's seen as a trick and a way to co-opt and placate and just diffuse the situation. So they're very consciously rejecting it. And what you led with the parliament, with the session, that they wanted to do a session to pass things, among which is a law that would grant amnesty, which everyone suspects was a way for them to give amnesty for themselves. And that, and nobody's interested in hearing any of this on the street. So again, it's a very, very different phenomenon than 2005, which is precisely why it's very unclear as to how we proceed from here. The people don't want a government or a political system where these people are in power. Now, these people are not going to give up power. So that's the impasse. where do we go from here? You know, and in the background, there's an economic collapse, right? The Lebanese, such as it is, right? It's not really an economic system.
Let's tax like WhatsApp.
Well, I mean, that was just a trigger. It just shows you the brazenness of this elite, that they're trying to raise revenue from anywhere they can possibly think of without doing any structural reforms and letting go of their of their profits, because the system really runs on the equivalent of a Ponzi scheme through the Lebanese banks. The Lebanese government is very much in debt. It's one of the most indebted governments on the planet. And the debt is serviced by the Lebanese banks, so the banks are exposed to it. In addition to that, the economy is dollarized, so the Lebanese pound is pegged to the dollar, so they need to sustain that as well, which all of this depends on a sustained inflow of U.S. dollars and cash from abroad into the Lebanon. So they need fresh money constantly, like in any Ponzi scheme, right? But with the sanctions on Hezbollah, the sanctions by the Arab states in the Gulf against Hezbollah, and which affected the workers in diaspora in the Gulf, and the ability to send remittances, and all of these things have affected the cash inflow, leading to this crisis point. So in the background of everything else, the economy is teetering on the edge, if it's not already over the edge. So everything is open. All the possibilities are open, and we really don't know, where we're going to go. We're staring at really new ground here.
And what I find fascinating is how some of the leaders of the protests are being directly targeted by opposition and even government members of parliament. We have a report from Gulf News about a Lebanese member of parliament, Hikmat Adib, calling for the beheading of Lebanese pop star Raghib Alameh. This is reported in Gulf News out of Dubai. A parliament member called for the beheading of a famous Lebanese pop star after the release of a song depicting the worsening situation of the country caused an outrage. Speaking on a talk show, one of the founders of the Free Patriotic Movement Party, founded by the current Lebanese President Michel Aoun, said the singer's head should be removed. Now, maybe that's just a turn of expression, but when you look at the description of what's going on with these different protests, I mean, and you just look at the sheer diversity, like you said before, and you have feminists, you have anarchists, you have socialists, you have nationalists, even, and this, I don't know how significant this is, but tell me, the Syriac Maronite Church is behind the protests as well, and they're starting to send out their officials onto the streets, at least with a little bit of theocratic support from one of Lebanon's traditional Christian institutions, Maronite institutions. I mean, does the U.S. come in and put money into this? Does the Iranian, Al-Quds Brigade from the IRGC send in more besieged guys? I mean, what happens here? This is what I'm trying to really figure out. I understand the direction that you're speaking about with the sectarian systems trying to do everything they can to get responsibility and to impose fixes that otherwise would not help prevent Lebanon's economy from going into more of a morass. But with maybe a minute left here, any recommendations for American policymakers on how they should relate to this?
Yeah, so I mean, to just focus on the U.S. here, I think the most important thing is not to give them any bailout to this political class. Because that will first of all, it's unclear what it would do, but it would, if it does anything, it'll just prolong its life, and it's not what the people on the streets want. And since the system is being defended by Hezbollah, we have to understand that this is a system that is tailor-made for Hezbollah. So if you are helping that system continue to survive, then you're really helping Hezbollah's case, right? So, the United States should not allow any bailout for this class. Let this phenomenon play out and let it continue, and support, just stay on the side of the protests in terms of supporting the exit of the entire political class. That's the most important thing. And with regard to the to people shooting on the streets or calling for the beheading or whatever, movement, the Lebanese president's movement, has been shooting people on the street. I mean, there's video of people, trying, and with guns. And the Lebanese armed forces, which the United States pays, has not done a good job in protecting these protests. In fact, they have been cracking down and arresting them. So the United States also should make sure to tell these guys that you're not going to get any money while you're doing this type of behavior.
As Tony Bedran, and I'm going to conclude with your own words, Tony, wrote quite presently in an article for Al Arabiya at the end of October. He says in his second to last paragraph in an article titled "Lebanon is a basket case run by a terror group, don't fund it." There's a long-standing conceit in Washington and in Europe that Lebanon must be saved, an impulse undiminished by the fact the country is dominated by Hezbollah and serves as a hub for its operations and criminal enterprise. However, a basket case run by a terror group cannot be treated like a normal state. Not wiser words could describe the situation, Tony. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.